The people who live in Lyme, Connecticut, probably wish their town was known for something else these days, but Lyme is the place that gave its name, unintentionally, to a dreaded disease that starts with a tick bite and can grow into many, many more complications and syndromes, aches, and pains. Today's guest knows a great deal about it, both from research and from first-person experience. Andrea Caesar has been diagnosed with Lyme disease, and she has written a book about all she has learned. It is called A Twist of Lyme, Battling a Disease That, in quotes, doesn't exist. Andrea Caesar holds degrees in international relations and teaching and speaks three languages besides English. She lives in New Hampshire with her daughter and writes about Lyme disease on her blog. Andrea, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
It's very good to have you. The book is a bit of an outgrowth of the blog, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
How long ago did you start that?
I started it in 2012. And it was about a year's worth of blogging, in addition to sort of compilation of my experience, just sort of in retrospect of my life with Lyme and how it's woven its way through my entire life.
Was there one particular incident or sequence of incidents that made you say, you know what, I need to start writing about this, that started the blog?
It was actually a moment that I had. I went to, after a very long process, I ended up in the office of a world-famous doctor who was the only one that was able to treat me, basically. And I had an appointment with him, my initial appointment, that just took so much energy for me to process. And I found myself in my hotel room digesting all of the information because I had to travel to Washington, D.C. to see him. And as I was listening to music on my iPod, a song came up. And that song really triggered something in me. And I realized that through this, I was meant to journal what was going on with me, and that my voice would really become one of those in the Lyme community that would want to express what Lyme disease is like on a human level and less of a scientific level. I think there's a lot of information out there that's scientific and, you know, medical journals, and what I really wanted to do was bring this back down to earth and say, hey, you know what, there are real people suffering from this, and this is what it's like. So I journaled my entire treatment.
Is there any reliable number on how many people might be suffering from Lyme disease in the country? And it's generally suspected to be, whatever the number is, it's suspected to be much more than that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the CDC came out with a number which grossly underestimates what we believe to be millions and millions of Americans and people across the world that are already infected with Lyme disease and either know it or most cases don't have any idea that they have it yet.
So how old were you, Andrea, when you first began noticing a decline in your health?
11 years old. I was 11 years old, and I was diagnosed at 37 years old. So I had a 26-year infection, and we had no real recollection of any tick bite. I mean, in 1986, nobody really knew anything about ticks or what they carried, even though there had been the outbreak in 1975 of Lyme. But Lyme is very hard to pinpoint. There are so many symptoms, and there's no real rhythm to them. And so it took us almost three decades to figure out what was wrong with me.
Which, as you recount in the book, was way too long with a lot of going on during those intervening years. What were the early symptoms when you're 11 years old? I mean, you have a few aches and pains from growing, but what were you feeling?
Yeah, as you know, we find that Lyme disease in children is very similar to what I experienced. And one really big sign was that I had a lot of migraines, very consistent migraines. And that was something that came out of the blue. We couldn't figure it out. And it was, you know, the kind of thing where I'd have to be in a black room. I couldn't get rid of it till I threw up. And I'd really be dizzy from these migraines for days and days. And no child should really have this amount of headache frequency. So that was a big indicator. But I also had these rock-solid muscles, and I was the only 13-year-old I knew that had weekly massages to deal with it. Extreme fatigue, shortness of breath. You know, I was a real sporty kid, gymnastics, ballet, and the soccer team and everything. And all of a sudden, I could barely pull any of it off. So those are some real indicators in children, you know, fever-like symptoms. I was just a sickly kid. I missed a lot of school, and we didn't really know why.
Rock-solid muscles, is that what you said?
Yeah, just absolutely so hard that I couldn't get them to relax.
Wow. And so what did doctors think it was at the time? I mean, they obviously had a couple of different things presenting here, the migraines, the muscles, et cetera.
I got tested a lot for mononucleosis. A lot of people said I was just sick. Some doctors thought that I was lazy and faking it, didn't want to go to school. the migraines they thought might be an allergy to different kinds of foods or stress or things like that. So they really didn't have an answer because there was no real rhythm. So it sort of looked like I was getting the flu every 6 or 8 weeks kind of thing. So,
and there were flare-ups like that? It would look like a recurrence of something?
No, it would look like something brand new, and that's what was really hard. One thing that was very consistent that happened at that time was that I got psoriasis on, not full-body psoriasis, but on my joints and on my scalp and in my ears. And I actually had that psoriasis my entire life until I got diagnosed and started being treated with heavy doses of antibiotics. I actually had no idea that psoriasis could be linked to Lyme disease, and now it's gone completely.
The number of things that can be linked to Lyme disease is pretty remarkable. We'll talk about those as we move further into the discussion. The book is called A Twist of Lyme, Battling a Disease That doesn't exist in quotes, because obviously it does. Andrea Caesar has been experiencing it for quite a few decades now. We'll talk more to Andrea Caesar about her book and take your phone calls and emails on the Jefferson Exchange. 800-838-3760 around the region, 541-552-6782 in the Rogue Valley by email jx@jeffnet.org. Back with Andrea Caesar, Lyme Disease, A Twist of Lyme, and your phone calls and emails in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Andrea Caesar, who never necessarily planned to write a book, but she got there by writing a blog about her experiences with Lyme disease. That's sort of morphed into a book called A Twist of Lyme, Battling a Disease That doesn't exist in quotes. You can join us as we talk about Andrea's experiences and talk more broadly about Lyme disease and the way it is viewed by the medical establishment. There's still some divisions there. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So just to reset, so age 11, all these things begin happening to you, lots of theories about what was going on. But as you explained, there really was not that much known about Lyme disease at that time?
That's right. I mean, I think that Lyme disease was sort of a, you know, it was 10, 11 years old at that point after its discovery in 1975, but really nobody knew much of anything about it. I mean, we're still learning about it today. So beyond that initial outbreak, you know, there was, even though I lived in Rhode Island just over the border from Connecticut, there really was no real reason to suspect Lyme disease when it really just looked like I had the normal kinds of things that kids get, and I had maybe some psoriasis and headaches on top of it.
Did it ever go, did your symptoms ever completely go away? I mean, were there periods when you just had nothing at all and you were just fine to go to school and play and do all that stuff?
You know, I have lived somewhat of a normal life, but I think that I've become somewhat of a chameleon. I, you know, throughout my life, I had a pretty normal college experience, but I somehow integrated naps into that. And I knew that I needed to go to a chiropractor and periodic massages and things like that. So the things that, the tools that I had learned sort of progressively became just routine for me. So, yes, in many ways I lived a normal life, but I think that I have come to understand that that normal life is just in my own terms. When I compare it to other people's lives, I realize that I really adjusted to living in a way when I didn't have a diagnosis. It was just, you know, I had resigned myself that that's what life was like, and I really didn't know what was different about my life from other people's lives.
And as you point out, you did get through high school and college, and then you got a pretty good gig working with a company with offices in Boston and Sweden. What'd you do with them?
Yeah, I was actually working with a company that focuses on cultural exchange students, so high school exchange students. I was one myself, and I did that for many years. And then upon moving back from Sweden, where I ran the Nordic countries version of that company, I went back and got my graduate degree.
So did you, in the process of working, and you worked in the United States and worked in the Nordic countries too, as you point out, did you call in sick to work a lot? I mean, was your job attendance up and down?
No, I, you know, I've always taken my career very seriously. I very often did not feel well, but again, I would adjust accordingly, and I'd get home and go to bed right away. So, you know, if I'd get out of work at, 5, 6, 7 o'clock, I would go home, maybe eat something on the way, right as I got home, and then I would go to bed.
And so through your early adult years, were you taking any or many drugs? And did you see doctors in Sweden, for example?
I saw several doctors in Sweden, and one of the doctors actually told me that I was being selfish and that I should cure that selfishness by having a baby so I would have somebody else to focus on. So I've heard some pretty terrible things. I did see doctors over there. I saw all kinds of therapists to help me with pain. I saw a psychologist to help me at the recommendation of another medical doctor to see if it was all in my head. I was put on antidepressants. You know, as you get older, the symptoms become more neurological, and the psychosomatic diagnoses start to come in, and you're told that it's in your head, that you're depressed, things like that. And, you know, if you hear that from enough people, you get broken down, beat up enough that you start to believe it yourself.
Andrea Caesar, a guest on the Jefferson Exchange, been suffering with Lyme disease for a good bit of her life. Their book is called A Twist of Lyme, Battling a Disease That Doesn't Exist. What do we know now about what function goes on? So a tick bites you, and then what happens? What does it put into your bloodstream that begins to turn into Lyme disease?
Well, it really depends on the tick itself, and also depends on the individual's immune system and how healthy they are, what kind of other factors in their lives may have broken down their immune systems. Some people have the immune system that can actually ward off many of the symptoms for years and years until something else happens, like they get another tick bite, or some people, you know, can get triggered by pregnancy, other forms of life changes or stressors that then make a person symptomatic. So it sort of wakes up a dormant infection. The typical way that people assume that things happen is you get a tick bite and then you get the bullseye rash that everybody has seen in their pictures. And really, very few people find the tick on them and very few people get the rash. So this is why this disease is so misunderstood and very difficult to diagnose, because most of us don't get the, I did not get a rash, I did not have a tick on me. So, you know, we're forced to sort of go through this web of, you know, we have to vet the usual suspects and make sure that, you know, we don't have other conditions, because it's very difficult to diagnose without a real solid testing method out there.
It sounds like Lyme disease works in some ways similar to what HIV does to the body. It just sort of looks for weak spots in the immune system, the opportunistic infections. It sounds like you're talking about the same general realm of things.
It's similar. In fact, you know, the actual spirochete of Lyme is not unlike syphilis under a microscope. And so when, you know, you're not incorrect in saying that there are similarities between HIV. My specialist actually is one of only two or three doctors in the world who was both on the front lines of treating HIV/AIDS and chronic Lyme disease, and he has made it very clear that Lyme disease in its chronic form is the HIV/AIDS of the 21st century, but on a much more grand scale, because it's much harder to diagnose, even though we now know that it exists, even though most of the medical community does not agree with that.
And this is Dr. Joseph Jemczak you're talking about?
That's correct. Dr. Joseph Jemczak in Washington, D.C.
And he does have experience with both Lyme disease and with HIV/AIDS, right?
Absolutely, yes. He actually diagnosed the first case of HIV/AIDS in North Carolina and worked with, he had a whole HIV clinic until it turned into, almost by mistake, a Lyme clinic about, I'd say, I think 10, 11 years ago.
And in fact, he wrote the foreword to your book, A Twist of Lyme, and he really blasts the medical powers that be in that foreword. What's his major argument?
Well, I have to say, rightfully so. His major argument is that the Infectious Diseases Societies of America appointed a panel to see if what they could do to prove whether chronic Lyme disease exists or not, and if so, how to treat it. And what they came up with was an answer that it does not exist. And this is very well documented in a film called Under Our Skin, which is an absolutely fantastic history of this sort of, I have to say, corruption and conflicts of interest might be a better way to put it. A panel of 12 that had more than 202 patents involved in everything from diagnostic testing of Lyme disease to actual vaccines. And so I just find it very ironic that the same people that are putting, you know, millions of dollars into a vaccine for Lyme disease are actually the same people that are claiming that it doesn't exist.
Andrea Caesar is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is A Twist of Lyme, Battling a Disease That Doesn't Exist, and doesn't exist is in quotes. It's an outgrowth of a blog she's been writing for several years now. First began showing symptoms at age 11, finally diagnosed at age 36, 37 with Lyme disease. Join us on the Exchange with your questions, your comments at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.com. I'm going to skip a few steps here from when you were in Stockholm. You did get married. The marriage came to a crashing conclusion. Your late 20s, you moved back in with your parents. Who was it who finally got you to go to a naturopath?
It was actually my mother who, you know, she said, you know, there's this doctor around the corner. He's a naturopath. And, you know, he's got this really fantastic reputation. Would you be willing to go see him? And I looked at her. I said, I would go to Brazil, to the jungle, to see anybody that could help me at this point. Of course I will go see him. And he, his name is Dr. Steve Clark, and I went to see him. And for the first time in all of my years, he just sat there for 30 minutes and looked me in the eyes and just listened to me and listened to everything I had been through. And while it took us 7 years to get a Lyme diagnosis, he was suspicious of Lyme in the beginning. I was able to get a positive diagnosis for Addison's disease, which is complete adrenal failure, which we now know has been caused by my body's just been beat up by Lyme disease so much that my adrenals have failed. So we started off with Addison's disease and went, that's, you know, hard to diagnose, but easy to treat. And when the treatment really wasn't working as well as we had hoped, we knew that there was another underlying cause that we would have to get to the bottom of, and it took us about 7 years to get there.
So you'd been seeing Dr. Steve Clark for about a year, I guess, before your first test for Lyme, and even then, it's like you don't get a really great answer here. What does IND mean?
The it's just basically like indecisive. They can't come up with a result. The two tests that are out there, the ELISA test and the Western blot being the one that we prefer in the Lyme community, is still only 30 to 50% accurate. So these tests test for antibodies in your blood system, which mean that your immune system has recognized an infection and is fighting the infection. But what's happened with chronic Lyme disease is that it's such a wonderful chameleon in that it hides itself inside body tissues. It's got a biofilm around it, so it infiltrates your organs and goes into your brain and everything, that it actually can hide from your immune system. And so when you're a person like me that's been infected for so long and you take this test, I don't have the antibodies for Lyme disease because it's quite frankly hidden itself from my body because my immune system is so beat up. So that test for me, no matter how many times I took it, was pretty useless because my infection was so vast that it was beyond diagnosing.
You mentioned earlier that that Lyme disease is a spirochete, like syphilis. And syphilis obviously can go through latent stages and affect many, many different body organs and tissues in many different ways. Mm-hmm. And so it does sound like there are some parallels here between the ways in which that spirochete acts upon the body.
Yeah, it's sort of like Lyme is a much more complicated version of syphilis, and it's also a much more brilliant organism. It gets into your brain. I definitely have had neurological symptoms for years and years, and I still do, although I would say I'm about 85% better overall right now. But it affects your heart. I mean, a lot of people that die from Lyme disease die from complications of the heart. They die from neurological complications, anywhere from what it can cause physically to just complete desperation and depression. Unfortunately, the number one cause of death in Lyme disease is suicide.
And I know of some cases myself. So getting to know, finally getting somebody to at least think that this might be Lyme disease, did that make you feel any better? I mean, given your physical challenges over time? I mean, I can imagine you probably could have used an emotional boost a few points along the way.
Yeah, I think the Addison's disease diagnosis helped me a lot in understanding why I was so tired. You know, when you're young and you are well-traveled and you're interested in the world and you want to be doing things, that kind of fatigue is actually really psychologically debilitating. And so it was nice for me to have a physical reason what was wrong with that. But when we first did the Lyme test on me, I didn't know enough about Lyme to understand that any suspicion of it would be helpful. I actually didn't really even think I had Lyme until I got the diagnosis. So once I got the diagnosis, that was a very mixed bag of emotions. Because by that time I had actually worked with the naturopath for almost 8 years, and we had become a Lyme clinic ourselves.
Worked in his office, you mean?
Yeah. I ran his office for almost 8 years, and the irony is I was watching all of these patients being treated for Lyme, and there was a new test that had come out that wasn't testing for the antibodies, but rather the bacteria itself, the spirochete die-off in urine. And I saw many patients who had been tested in the past come back negative with the blood test, being tested positive with this urinalysis, which, by the way, is not, you know, necessarily a standard test either. There are no standard tests. But I saw so many people getting the positive diagnosis that I just thought, you know what, I really need to do this test and see if this can be the answer. And sure enough, it came back with the die-off of the spirochete in my urine.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. Andrea Caesar's our guest. She's written a book about her experiences with Lyme disease. Her book is called A Twist of Lyme. You ended up leaving Dr. Steve Clark's practice and headed to graduate school. Is that right?
No, I actually went to grad school before I started working with Dr. Clark.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess I marvel at just how much you have been able to accomplish. I mean, the number of countries you've visited and the amount of time you spent overseas and exchange trips and graduate school and everything, you've still managed to do a lot despite what your body was doing to you most of the time.
Yeah, I've been lucky in that, you know, my physical symptoms have been very painful. But, you know, I'm just a very determined personality, and I'm sort of type A, and I just was completely determined to not let things get me down. If I didn't have an answer, then I didn't think I was really sick. I just thought that I had aches and pains, and that was just what I had been, you know, the cards I had been dealt in life. And so, I'm extremely fortunate in that I didn't become paralyzed, although my doctor does say, you know, had the wind blown in the wrong direction, now having pictures of my brain, that I easily could have been paralyzed, I would be unable to speak, you know, anything. I was lucky. Just that's all I can say. Just very, very blessed and lucky.
What do the pictures of your brain show?
I have cerebral vasculitis and encephalopathy. The initial scans showed encephalitis, which, you know, at this point has taken its toll enough so that I'll never really get rid of the damage that it's caused. But I also had seizure activity that I didn't know about, and all kinds of things. The Lyme has actually infiltrated every single part of my brain. Usually a Lyme patient will have two or three parts of their brain that have been compromised, but I, having had the infection for so long, have it in every part of my brain.
So what's the long-term prognosis there? Because I know, and I'm not trying to talk too close a parallel with syphilis, but it can do horrible things to the brain over time.
Yeah, you know, I'm very lucky in that I have had extremely successful treatment. I'm clearly able to talk, and I wrote a book, and I'm a mother, a single mom, and things are going well. The long-term prognosis, at this point, there's no cure for Lyme disease, so we're looking for long-term remission. I would say that I'm almost there. I would say hoping for spring. And long-term remission, and then I just basically have to keep an eye on the illness, and if it were to reemerge, then I would regroup and go back to my doctor, and I don't think I'll ever be out of contact with Dr. Jemczak. I think there will be periodic visits just because of the severity of my infection, probably for the rest of my life.
Andrea, you just mentioned a single momhood. What got you thinking about adopting a child, given the general circumstances of your life?
Well, you know, nothing had ever held me back. You know, I lived and worked in Sweden for 10 years, and yeah, I had some headaches and I was tired and stuff, but, you know, there was no reason for me not to have a child. I know lots of people that, you know, are in much worse situations than I knew that I was in. I had no idea I had Lyme disease. And I wanted to have a child, and I didn't, I think because of my international background, it just never really occurred to me to have a biological child. It just, as a single mom, I figured, you know, there are children out there that need homes, and I have a great home, and I would be a great mom. And so I really have never allowed anything to hold me back from what I want to do, including now.
All right, we'll talk much more about where things are going for Andrea Caesar after a bunch of rough years with Lyme disease. Her book is called A Twist of Lyme, Battling a Disease That Doesn't Exist in quotes. We'll come back to the exchange and take your phone calls and emails as well. Back with Andrea Caesar and you on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. It's the final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Andrea Caesar, who managed to have a pretty interesting life despite the fact that she had a lot of aches and pains and illnesses and no energy. And turns out after many years, she was diagnosed with Lyme disease. She's written a blog about her travails online, which morphed into a book called A Twist of Lyme, Battling a Disease That Doesn't Exist. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about the challenges of living with Lyme disease and the challenges of getting the medical community to agree on approaches to it. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 around the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. So just to reset, I mean, you started showing symptoms at age 11. How many years after getting sick did you get a positive test for Lyme disease?
Yeah, it was 26 years later.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a long time.
And
the unfortunate thing was I started treatment, the normal antibiotic treatment with oral antibiotics right away, which is outlined by ILADS.org, the sort of go-to organization for the Lyme community. But my body was so broken down that it couldn't handle it. And so I started seeing Dr. Joseph Jemczyk in Washington, and I went off all antibiotics and first had to stabilize my immune system and my neurological symptom for about 4 or 5 months before I could even start the antibiotics again.
So Dr. Jemczyk, how did you find him?
He's in Under Our Skin, and the documentary that I mentioned. And I somehow had a connection to him right away in watching what he's been through, what he's done. This is a doctor that has not only fought for us with who have Lyme disease, but also HIV/AIDS, as I mentioned. And I just feel like he's the kind of doctor who treats diseases that nobody else will treat. And that, for me, is a kind of integrity that I want my doctor to have, and it immediately led me to trust him. And as I've gotten to know him, and he wrote the foreword of my book, it's just proven again and again that he's just the absolute right decision for me, and, you know, he's my guy.
You mentioned it was a naturopath, though, Dr. Steve Clark, who first proposed Lyme disease as a possible reason for all that was happening to you. So once you got Dr. Jemczyk into the picture, I mean, you'd already been doing some naturopathic remedies, it sounds like. So how did you decide which approaches to take?
Well, I did. The naturopath was able to prescribe antibiotics, so I tried that route, and my body just broke down. So it was actually the naturopath, Dr. Clark, that said, you know, the scope of your infection is so vast that it's just beyond my expertise, and you really need to see one of the best in the world. So we looked at a list of who I might go to, and I just knew right away when I saw Jemczyk that was who I would be seeing.
Let us take a call. We have Mark in McKinleyville, California, on the line for you. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Andrea Caesar.
Hi. Yeah, you said that there was no treatment for Lyme, and I was wondering if that for all stages. I've heard early stages people get successful treatment with antibiotics. I have friends who have been taking hyperbaric oxygen treatments. I was wondering, if there's no treatment, what are you being treated with?
I actually don't recall. There's no real testing, but there is treatment available. It's just that nobody really agrees on what kind of treatment one should have, but it was actually the testing that I said that there's no real agreed upon testing that works, that is reliable enough. There are different ways and different people that approach treatment. There are two, you know, three kinds of infections, actually. You can successfully treat Lyme disease upon the initial infection if you have some high-dose antibiotics right away upon getting the bite. Those antibiotics need to be for several weeks. It's usually doxycycline if you're an adult, and it's at a higher dose than most regular MDs will give you. And it's about a month to 6 weeks treatment. If you do that, you can successfully treat the acute infection, which is just sort of in that initial area where you got the bite. In terms of long-term chronic treatment, there are many different approaches. Some people feel that they're successful in doing it completely naturally. I knew that because of the scope of my brain damage and things that had happened to my other organs that I needed to go the route of high-dose antibiotics via IV to the heart. I did it for about 10 months. There are many people that do alternative treatments, and certainly having worked in a naturopathic doctor's office for 8 years, I'm very open to those treatments. My treatment is actually integrative. Dr. Jemczyk works with integrative approaches, so we also work with a great deal of probiotic treatment to make sure that we're not compromising gut health. We work with amino acids, vitamins, supplements, all kinds of things. So and also neurological and immune support. So it's not just antibiotics that I'm treated with. A lot of people take the oxygen approach. There are other people that take essential oil approaches, saunas. There are many, many different approaches to do it. What is successful depends on the person, the level of the infection, what co-infections they have. It's really very, very complicated because people with Lyme disease are a lot like snowflakes. There are no two that look alike. So what may work perfectly for one person may be a complete disaster for the next person.
Mark, thanks for the call on that. And so, Andrea, not only do the treatments differ from person to person, as you point out, because of the snowflake thing, but I have to believe that you're probably running into some of the same issues with antibiotics that a lot of other branches of medicine are running into, that you're getting some resistance.
I actually am pretty lucky in that I have found a doctor who does pulse treatments, and that's becoming more and more popular. Pulse treatments are when you do, you take different kinds of antibiotics, and you only take them for short periods. So I will do a 2 or 3 week course of 2 or 3 different kinds of antibiotics at once, and then I take a break from all antibiotics for about 3 weeks, and then I go back on that course again, and I do 2 rounds, and then I go back to see the doctor. We reassess where I am at that point, and then we choose what antibiotics we're going to be doing on the next round so that you don't become resistant to them and that your body also gets a break. So this is not a constant round of antibiotics. I don't take antibiotics every day, even when I'm on treatment. So we do this in a way that is not beating my body up, and we're making sure that we are sort of creating a foundation for consistently improving my immune health, consistently improving organ health, et cetera, as much as we possibly can while fighting these infections. And Lyme is not alone in its infection. I have several other co-infections, as everybody with Lyme disease does. So,
Let's
complicated.
Absolutely. Let's take another call. Here's Andy in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Andrea Caesar. Andy, go ahead. We're talking Lyme disease.
Well, hi, Jeff. As you may know, I'm from Connecticut. You and I have a mutual friend there, by the way. It's his birthday today. I had Lyme disease, was diagnosed with Lyme, and was treated successfully with doxycycline. But I'm finding out here out west, there seems to be a lot of denial about Lyme disease in the medical community, and I'm wondering if Andrea can address that.
All right, thank
sure.
you.
Sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, you're spot on, and this has a lot to do with the IDSA and their guidelines. You know, most medical doctors follow the guidelines when it comes to Lyme disease and other infectious diseases. They follow the guidelines of the Infectious Diseases Societies of America. And because of the guidelines that they have given, it basically, as a rule, those who do not specialize in Lyme disease are going to follow those guidelines, which do not recognize that Lyme disease exists in its chronic form. Of course, everybody knows that Lyme disease exists when you get the initial tick bite. That's a whole different ballgame. That's not what we're talking about here. This is about the long-term infection. And until, you know, the past couple of years, you could actually lose your license for treating Lyme disease with high-dose antibiotics in certain states if it didn't, you know, adhere to the IDSA guidelines. So I think there's some fear in the medical community from the past, which is now spilling over into really re-educating people. I mean, until people start to realize, and it's happening now, at least in New England, pretty much everyone knows somebody who has Lyme disease in a pretty serious form. And so once we are at a point where, you know, this lie by the IDSA has become too big to confess at this point, but pretty soon they're going to have to confess and deal with it. We have an epidemic in this country and it needs to be dealt with.
Here's another call from Al and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Andrea Caesar. A Twist of Lyme is her book.
Thank you for taking my call. It seems like when you guys speak of tick, does that mean any tick or just any bite will cause a disease? And where can one go to be tested?
All right. Thanks for that, Al. Appreciate it. Is it usually a deer tick, Andrea?
Yes. It's called the black-legged tick or the deer tick, which carries Lyme disease. But all ticks carry some kinds of infections. So even though you may not have a black-legged tick, you might have a tick that carries, like out in the West, you have Rocky Mountain spotted fever, for example, that needs to be treated with antibiotics. There are other infections that can be caused by other ticks. But the tick that carries Borreliosis, Lyme disease, is the black-legged deer tick.
And what we usually have in Western Oregon, Al, are the dog ticks. But,
yep.
But you know, if you find a tick on you, first of all, stop it, get it off you, and then look up online and see the pictures.
Yeah, on my website, under the helpful resources, there's actually, if you put the tick, any tick that you get, honestly, at this point, if you put it in a plastic Ziploc bag with a damp cotton ball and go to my website, and there's actually a place under helpful resources where you can print out the paperwork to send in your tick for testing, find out what species it is and what diseases, infections it's carrying. It's much easier to test a tick than a person.
Really? Well, I guess so. It's because it doesn't hide. There's not much place
exactly
to hide in there. Right. So I haven't even asked at this point, Andrea, yet about the hours and hours and hours you've spent in treatment and doctor's offices and consultation, all the drugs, the IV antibiotics, everything. How have you been able to pay for all this? What kind of medical bills have you rung up over the years?
Well, you know, I'm not unlike many people around the country. I mean, most of my treatment with Dr. Jemczyk is not covered, especially the IV treatments, which ended up being about $36,000. I have blown through my savings. I have thankfully had some help from my family. But, you know, there are people across America who are declaring bankruptcy. They're losing their homes, and they're actually, you know, becoming so depressed because of their financial situations that they're actually committing suicide. But then there are those who are just simply not treated. And this is part of the reason that, you know, this is my 105th interview. I am out here on a mission to let people know that this is just not okay. Americans need to be treated for what they're ill for, whether or not they have insurance. And this is a great big crack in our system when we have millions of Americans who can't get diagnosed with a disease because of a panel that is not allowing for further research for proper testing, but also that there are guidelines for treating this disease that are ineffective. And so when you're treated outside of those guidelines, you pay for it out of pocket. And that is an absolute atrocity in my eyes. So I basically, I still work. I started working from the home. Thankfully, it's been extremely successful, and I'm able to pay for a lot of my treatments. And I do have help from, for example, my grandparents and some help from my parents as well. It's really been a struggle for all of us.
Insurance companies, I imagine, follow along with the medical folks then and have some limits on what they'll provide. I mean, insurance companies tend to limit anyway, I guess. But
they certainly have no interest in paying all of the money that we have to pay to go through Lyme disease.
No, and I noticed with antibiotics, they'll pay for 4 weeks and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I am lucky in that some of my medications that help with my neurological issues, things like that, are often covered by insurance, which is great because they're not directly treating the Lyme disease. They're treating, you know, the effects of the Lyme disease, which are recognized. So, you know, it's a spider web, to be honest with you.
Have you joined support groups? Have you hung around with other people who have also had Lyme disease who can lift the burden a little bit?
You know, I highly recommend that for people out there who need the support networks. For me, I had worked in the Lyme clinic for so long, and I was so knowledgeable about Lyme disease that I actually chose not to participate, partially because I live in an area that it would take me about an hour to get to the closest support group, but also because I have had it for so long that I really don't want to fall into this pit where I identify myself as the disease. And so just on a personal level, while I think support groups are a fantastic resource for most Lyme patients, for me personally, the most cathartic thing I could do was keep my blog, research, write the book, and get out there and speak. And I certainly am in contact with a huge percentage of the Lyme community, but I don't attend support group meetings.
And so generally, would you say your health is pretty good right now? Are you in remission? I mean, is there remission from Lyme disease? Can we even agree on that?
There is remission. I'm not in it yet. I still have my ups and downs. I'm currently on an antibiotic holiday, which means I feel better than I do when I'm treating it. I have just finished treating, after about 9 months, a really, really tough co-infection that had me just absolutely in its grasp. And so I'm happy that that treatment's over and I'm feeling better on this latest treatment. I'm doing well. I can't say anything, you know, I can't complain. Given the cards that I was dealt, I am thriving.
A lot to take in the book. It's called A Twist of Lyme, Battling a Disease That Doesn't Exist in quotes. Andrea Caesar wrote it. She's been our guest. Andrea, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Take care. And that'll do it for today's exchange. You can find out more about the program and subjects and suggest a guest at jeffexchange.org. You'll find show topics and recordings and pictures of our studio guests on our Facebook page. The same link's available on Twitter as well. If you're listening in the morning, the takeaway is coming up next. If you're listening to our evening rebroadcast, we'll be followed by news from the BBC. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll talk about free meals in summer, an expansion of one of those programs in Josephine County. We'll get to our weekly Vents Day segment, your chance to vent your spleen politely on topics in the news, topics TBA. And then we will talk about breeding disease-resistant bees at 9 o'clock. That's all tomorrow on The Exchange. Our producer and today's engineer, Charlotte Duren. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.